All right, you're back in the DFSR, and we're here with our NFL podcast for Monday, September 19th. I am Doug Norrie. Sitting across the way from me live is...
James Davis!
And we're going to take this time to talk a little bit about what went down in Week 2 for the NFL. Maybe start looking ahead for Week 3. I'm just, frankly, just excited to be in the same room with you, buddy.
Yeah, buddy, it's a dream come true.
Yeah, we're actually sitting in a hotel room right now at a conference for something else, but no one really cares about that. All they care about is our thoughts on, or maybe you care about our thoughts, for about week two in the NFL, so we'll get to it. We're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short. Want to help you get started or keep playing for FanDuel and DraftKings NFL. For $29.95 a month, you get access to our projections for FanDuel and DraftKings, plus optimal lineups powered by Lineup Lab, and also access to our Player Lab, which helps you filter for really anything you want to look for on a given slate of NFL, defense versus position, defense versus specific wide receivers, let's say, trends and carries, trends and targets, everything like that. And as we get more information for the NFL season, that gets more and more and more powerful. And that's actually one of the things we're going to be talking about today is coming out of week... Well, give me your overall thoughts about week two when we're talking about just kind of looking back at the week that was.
It was an odd one, right? Because in a lot of ways, we hit on a lot of big points. Cam, the Panthers, I think a lot of the kind of fringe guys we had. We talked about Kelvin Benjamin, Travis Benjamin, his kid brother. so there was a lot of success stories there. I mean, it was an insane week to evaluate analytically, like in terms of talking about DFS outfits, because just of the sheer number of injuries that happened, and then one really high volume game in particular just going totally against script in the Giants Saints. So, you know, we were talking about this earlier while we were waiting for our wives to get done playing with whatever they were doing so we could actually start the podcast, and just talking about how there were so many games where we didn't really learn anything because the game script was so unusual. So I'm left feeling very strange after week two.
Yeah, I mean, just from a point of honesty, our main slate lineups just got pretty buzzed.
On FanDuel in particular.
On FanDuel in particular, we got buzzed by the Woodhead injury on DraftKings, which hurt. FanDuel just ended up being bad. Just no other way, no way around it. Manning was bad. Baldwin played hurt. We learned Rashad Jennings played hurt after the game. So it's a couple of the... I don't want to blame things on like this bad luck injury. There was definitely maybe some evaluative pieces there. It was all... We were saying that really every road we could have taken down, we took just the wrong road because...
Well, yeah, I mean, we had a lot of these 50-50 decisions, you know, Marvin Jones or Tajay Sharp on different prices, but Larry Fitzgerald we looked at. Again, Kelvin Benjamin decided he was the unsafe option. We wound up splitting on Brown and Beckham. Neither was fantastic, but Brown was an absolute killer. We did go down some good roads, though. You know, we got D'Angelo Williams in there instead of going double cheap at running back. But, yeah, overall, you know, it's one of those things where the same system liked all of those guys. The people behind it, us, you know, picked. We had to pick winners sometimes, like when it's razor thin. So, yeah, we did not do a great job picking winners. But Overall, I'd say if you spread it across multiple slates, you had access to all the guys who were in the million-dollar lineup, basically. It's just our optimizer, when you click calculate, didn't put them all in the same
lineup. Yeah, when I took a look at that million-dollar lineup, I thought to myself, oh, yeah. We had every single one of these guys except for David Johnson. I know David Johnson was in there, and he was not a guy that we were ever high on, and he was actually probably the worst performer of the group. But I looked at the rest of that list with, you know, Blunt, Travis Benjamin, Kelvin, all those guys. Maybe Diggs wasn't so high on our list either. That's a guy we'll maybe talk about a little bit on this one, or getting into the week three picks later on in the week. Let's talk. Well, I think the one theme that came for me, and I think this is not a new thing for anybody here, but was just the amount of injuries that came out of week two. We're walking into week three, specifically at running back. There are more in terms of quarterback and a few at wide receiver, but running back is the big one. Let me just go down this list really quick, and we can spend a minute touching on all these guys. But Peterson, Abdullah, Jonathan Stewart, Rawls, Woodhead, Doug Martin. Varying levels of injuries there. Like, Woodhead is not coming back. It looks like he might be done for the year.
Yeah, we sure know how to pick him on the Chargers, don't we?
there was 2 weeks in a row where a Charger that we were almost every lineup guy on just gets carted off. That's pretty rare. You don't see that happen every week, but that's the built-in variance of football is the injury. You know, every sport has its own, like, weird variance thing. Football's is definitely almost, not exclusively, but the biggest one by far is injury. We'll start with... Which one do you think is the biggest piece of news from all those guys?
I mean, it depends. Like, obviously, just from a football perspective, Adrian Peterson's the biggest piece. But from a DFS perspective, he wasn't really a hugely owned player anyway. Kind of overpriced versus just receivers. Like, the FanDuel and DraftKings pricing hasn't caught up to who's actually the most consistent high-scoring player. So I think the Woodhead injury is actually surprisingly impactful, since essentially because he was a split carry guy, and Melvin Gordon has just been solid all season long anyway. And I think while the Chargers haven't been in love with Gordon in the past, he's served in pretty admirably, and I wouldn't be surprised to see him become just one of these every down backs going forward. So he's a guy I'm definitely keeping a strong eye on going forward. A lot of the other situations, specifically at running back, I'm still kind of just left shrugging. And I think you made the point to me too that in a lot of cases, these guys' backups were already priced as starters, so it's just really hard to find value, even though there was a lot of injuries, unfortunately.
So that's the problem going into week two or week three, because like Gatlis, we'll take Gordon specifically just to start. Mm-hmm. He's 7,100 on FanDuel. That's just not a deal. I know he's playing the Colts, and the Colts have their own defensive issues, sort of more against the pass than the run, but 7,100 for a guy like Gordon, it's just not, I mean, like, so you get 7,100 for him, and for, I don't know, 7,500, you get a guy like Matt Forte, more established.
30 carries.
More established, worse matchup against the Chiefs. This is one thing we're going to be looking at really closely is some of these matchups this week. There's a bunch of teams got on byes coming into week three, so and a couple of them are the really bad ones, again, really bad defensive teams. So I'm not sure, like, so for Gordon, yes, he probably becomes a 25-touch-a-game guy, which is amazing, but he's also just still not the best running back in the world, and 7,100 is not a deal.
Yep.
You mentioned Peterson, unclear there. Who gets the carries? McKinnon, Asiata. I think Asiata out-carried McKinnon. Neither of them are good.
Yeah, historically in that situation, we've seen McKinnon kind of fill in more as the feature back, but Asiata's just a goal line vulture as well, so I mean, McKinnon's quite cheap. If he were named like the clear starter or something, you could consider it, but you know, it's, I mean, given how hard it's going to be to find value, you consider it, especially, but yeah, nothing jumps front of mind. Some of the other ones, like Doug Martin, Charles Sims is already in the 6,000s. He could wind up being a value just because he's used a lot out of the backfield in the passing game, too, but yeah, I mean, even Fozzie Whitaker, like, he's essentially just as expensive as Jonathan Stewart was, and we didn't like Stewart last week, so I don't know what you want to do.
Right, it was funny, because when I started, like, going down the well, or going down sort of the road of all these hurt running backs, I was thinking, oh, this is going to be awesome. There's going to be...
You bastard. You sick masochist. Oh, this is awesome. Look at all these guys getting hurt.
This is amazing. Right, so, but... And I kept waiting for, like, that Spencer Ware at 5,000, you know, Christian Michael at 5,500, whatever those guys' prices were week one. I kept waiting for that to emerge, and it just didn't happen. Those guys, they just weren't there. And then you posited that maybe some of these sites, FanDuel specifically, were just pricing the handcuffs in that 6,000 range on the off chance that this is what's going to happen to avoid the 90% start across the industry.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's some merit to that theory, simply because I think sometimes I imagine they get a lot of customer complaints like, hey, this guy that I never heard of was a 30% start and he was great and I lost. Like, for the really casual fans that just don't stay up on the news every day. So I wonder if they are moving in the direction of trying to become more price efficient at the cost of some fun and value for good players. But yeah, I wonder. Or I wonder if they're just waiting later until finally releasing the API. That could also be into it, because I was looking at the backups, the theoretical handcuffs going forward, and the only guy really that's too expensive is like Kenyon Drake. Otherwise, you know, they're all below the 5,500 range or so. So yeah, I'm not sure what to make of it. Yeah, unfortunately, I don't think we're just not going to get away with much this week.
Yeah, and that's what I thought was going to be the theme, and it just doesn't seem like it's going to be, which, again, it's not a shame. There's still going to be value out there. We haven't run through, we just started updating our system for next week, running through some of what the, you know, just what we tried to learn from this week, and and we talked about it before. There just wasn't a ton to learn, right? So,
well, let me jump in on that, because I think that, to your point, the injury piece, that is a direction most people are going to go to try to suss out what we've learned, but I think there have been some interesting trends in terms of usage that I think are quite surprising. And while a lot of people, I think, they're going to look at this injury situation just because that's muscle memory for them, and rightfully so. And, you know, they might miss out on great values elsewhere. Like, we talked about last week how there were only 7,000-yard rushers last year. And this year it's playing out totally differently. We have, let's see here. We have four running backs with more than 50 carries through the first 2 weeks of the season, which is pretty incredible. D'Angelo Williams obviously going to be on a lot of radars. Same with Matt Forte, just after the 3-touchdown game. And then you got the two guys playing on Thursday in Blunt and Miller, who have reached over 50 carries as well. So while Blunt is probably going to be on a lot of radars, you know, big high-profile game on Sunday, Lamar Miller, I think, is going to be a really interesting value play. Again, it stinks it's on Thursday because everyone just looks at all the players playing on Thursday and they'll take a look. But that volume there is really hard to replicate elsewhere. Going down the list,
Let me stop real quick about that game, because that game's going to be really interesting, because another piece of like that injury pie is Garoppolo gets hurt for the Patriots, and now they're on Jacoby Brissett. And so you just have no idea now what they're going to do, right? So there are going to be some interesting plays from that game, strictly because you're going to probably have Brissett be the starting quarterback in that game. The Patriots are nothing if not able to figure out what to do with the assets they have. And he could end up being like an interesting guy. Bennett kind of emerged as the guy we thought he was going to be week one. And then you have Blunt, and now they're just going to say, because Blunt, sort of like, so with D'Angelo Williams, he's getting all the carries now because they're not saving him for anything. Le'Veon Bell's coming back. No need to save D'Angelo Williams. Right. Well, LeGarrette Blunt is the same kind of thing. Tom Brady's coming back. They're not going to need LeGarrette Blunt to like run 25
times. He's not
going to
get 25 times a game.
Right, exactly. So this is the time to use him in that sort of thing. So it's not exactly the same situations, but it kind of is in the sense that we're just biding time till we have our other guy back. Now, it's not a one-for-one swap on running backs for the Patriots, but I think they've been very, very clear about how they're going to use Blunt. So, yeah, that Thursday game is going to end up being really, really interesting, and I think it will be something that it will be correct to play it, and it will be a shame because other people will...
we'll understand that.
Yeah,
I think that's a great point. I think looking at usage on running backs, there's just such a clear divide between the haves and have-nots right now that I think that could be an area where people wind up making mistakes. I mean, we talked about Melvin Gordon. So it's 7,100 on FanDuel. Yeah, that's not fantastic, but his 38 carries are still seventh in the league, and that was with splitting carries 16-14 with Woodhead in week one. And then you got Carlos Hyde at 37, Gurley at 36, and then you're down to Peterson and Jennings, both injured, at 31. So after that, no other running back is averaging 15 carries a game so far this season, which is just pretty insane. I mean, the fact that just no one is touching the ball means that you got to find value somewhere. I could see a scenario where Gordon winds up making it in the lineup simply because all those other big volume guys, Ezekiel Elliott, Forte, all those other guys are now so much more expensive that it's going to just be really tough. Well, Forte only 7,500, but Elliott's 81, Gurley 83, Johnson 84, D'Angelo 88. Like, that's a lot to spend up, even for guys that are getting high volume. That's definitely something I'm really going to try and figure out going into this week, because I don't want to spend up for one of these guys who gets 18 carries a game.
Well, that's what it is. That's like the new efficiency, right? The new efficiency is knowing who's going to get the ball. If you just don't know, as we've seen it, like we went in, so a good example for us was last week with Rashad Jennings. Mm-hmm. We loved the carries that he was sort of projected to get with the game script, that even if he wasn't going to be the highest volume guy, it just stood to reason that the way the Giants had been using him, he was going to see 16 carries sort of almost no matter how the game played out, the way they were playing. And that just didn't happen, down to the point where they even went away from him on the goal line in favor of Vereen. And that's when I knew it was truly over, because
I mean, he had been quite bad. And this is the problem with a lot of the high volume guys this season. I think of the guys with the top 10 attempts, none of them has more than 4.2 yards per carry. So yeah, running back is just kind of a mess. And that's why I think you could do a lot worse than just going like double volume at the mid-range, like Forte and Gordon, you know. And we'll see. We haven't actually written our picks yet, but it wouldn't surprise me if that's how running back winds up shaking out, unless we get news that there is a tremendous value guy, one of those guys in the 5,000s that rises to the front of the pack on one of the teams where people are job hunting.
But I just don't see that happening. I mean, I did not a totally deep dive on this before, but it did what I would consider a moderate news dive, and just really looked around and started adjusting things within the system and starting to look at volume and carries and targets. And each time, because I'll do that independent of price. Like, I won't look at the price first. I'll go into our data set and just start saying what I think is going to be correct, or we both do it this way, and then sort of toggle back over and say, oh, what was the price on this guy? And every single time I was disappointed. So because I just thought, I just kept waiting for, and I've already said this, but I kept waiting for that guy. You know, one guy that sort of falls into that category possibly is Theo Riddick for the Lions. If he were to be, I mean, he got 11 carries last week. He's more of a possession receiver, like, you know, a slot receiver that they use him as. But if he were to be all of a sudden a guy that they use in the running game a little bit more, even though that's not, hasn't really been his traditional role, he's especially he's in a special deal on DraftKings because of the sort of the targets and the receptions that he could stand to get. And he also could profile as a three down back in the sense that he's already a third down guy. So if they were
one down, two to go.
Right. So if they were able to use him in the early stages of the running game, but then again, still just really more on DraftKings of the receptions. Like, he's still just not a total deal. So it's going to be, I think that's going to be really the story of the week, is where we go with running backs. I think the receivers, not too many new things to glean. Targets outside of a few guys here and there, honestly, just went the way that I thought they were going to go this week. One guy that saw a big bump, and I kind of wondered about this going in, and I was wondering if this was done to either because he's great or to placate him, was Dez. So he sees well into the double digits of targets this time, and it was almost clear from the very beginning of the game that that was the plan. And it makes sense to target your best guy. It also makes sense to target your best guy who has some like emotional issues possibly and that could just start sitting out the whole season if he just wasn't getting thrown the ball enough. What do you think about the way Dak sort of shifted? The first game, he crazy targeted Witten. Second game, he crazy targets Dak. Which one is the truth, do you think, going forward?
It's probably somewhere in the middle. I suspect that you're right about Bryant eating up a lot of Witten's mid-range and short stuff. I think that probably the Cowboys still aren't really comfortable launching the ball downfield. Dak, pretty efficient. Only 30 attempts, but he was 22 of 30 for 292 yards. So you'll just take that, right? I mean, that's totally within the bounds of what you want from your backup or your young new quarterback. So I could see them kind of meeting in the middle. What it mostly tells me when you have such a disparity from week to week is that it might be an erratic situation that's going to be hard to get a lot of value out of. But yeah, we'll see. And I think there were actually a decent amount of stories that came out of the rest of the NFL receiver-wise. You know, maybe not tremendous game changers, but where either opinions were solidified, and I think we can hold on to that, or we learned some brand new stuff. One thing I thought was really interesting, of course, was Stephon Diggs' Sunday night performance. Diggs now leads the NFL in receiving yards with 285. I will caution people a little bit here. I mean, Diggs is still very affordable, so from that perspective, like, it's tough to go too wrong at 6,400 for a guy who just had 180 receiving yards in a game. But 16 out of 20 receptions to targets this season is very, very unsustainable. I don't think he's going to obviously be the top receiver going forward, but given that he's tied for 11th in the NFL with 20 targets, he's still plenty valuable at that rate. So he's definitely still a guy I'm going to keep my eye on.
Well, unless you were going to move on from him.
So, I was going to move on from
him. Okay, so one the case for Diggs here is actually the case that we were making for Jordan Matthews early in the year, is that Bradford actually is a pretty accurate passer, all things considered.
Sure.
And so that was why we still were not on the Eagles, you know, train early on, but it didn't seem like the Eagles situation was as bad as it could be, because when we looked at Bradford's stats, like, he's somewhat accurate, he's an accurate passer. And Sean Hill just wasn't the case, and Teddy Bridgewater wasn't as accurate as him. So the Diggs thing could be for real if you think that, you know, Bradford's interception piece was maybe a little unlucky last year and the accuracy was there. I don't know. Diggs, I think, could stick. I don't think he's going to end up converting whatever it was, like 80% of his.
No, but this is probably the last week you have to buy Diggs at a value. So at 6,400, he's going to be very, very highly owned after that Sunday night performance. The API did come out before that game, so I wouldn't be surprised if he's just an every lineup guy for a lot of people. But I think there are a couple of, I mean, the wide receiver situation, I think, is actually kind of oddly scattered as well, because, I mean, we saw obviously some big names like Antonio Brown, completely no-show in a very solid matchup.
Well, no-show, but he had 11 targets.
11 targets and 40 yards receiving.
He was terrible. Don't get me wrong. The game was bad, yeah.
Sure. But, you know, people are going to be reacting to that kind of news, so people are going to feel as though they learned something there. I think you and I are in agreement probably that he's still Antonio Brown.
Changes nothing for me. Yeah.
Changes nothing for me either.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's some other guys that are moving around on the list for me. I like that Jordy Nelson's up to 20 targets so far this season. The two touchdowns, I think, are very nice as well. Shows that the Packers are probably back to trusting him as something like a premium guy. I thought it was interesting to see AJ Green head back in the other direction after the biggest week possible, week one. He just comes back to earth. I mean, he was still highly targeted at 8 targets, but didn't really do anything with them. So, you know, this is where it's so easy to draw big conclusions off of big week one performance. And I think a lot of those huge week one guys, Jason Witten's a good example of this, frankly, went the other direction. And then there are other guys who solidified their spots even firmer. Kelvin Benjamin, we talked about earlier as a call we had going into this week. If he's going to put up those kind of numbers in a game that the Panthers are front running, he's going to be fantastic.
All he's clearly their guy now. Yeah. Like, he's just clearly back. He's clearly wide receiver one. He is not going to creep into the, you know, Antonio Brown, Julio Jones. Actually, Julio Jones is the guy I want to get to in a second, but maybe not into that price territory, but it's going to be close. Like, if, especially if, you know, they have not as big of a running game as they thought they did, or at least not a safe running game that Stewart gives you safety. He's not great, but he's just a known commodity. If they don't have that anymore, you know, Cam, they were willing to just throw all day.
Yep. Greg Olsen, another guy who's come back into the picture.
And so if that's going to be the case, and Benjamin's just going to be that 10-target-a-game guy, which is probably pretty likely at this point, like that Cam and Benjamin thing has high, that combo really has a high floor every week now.
Yeah, and I mean, we told them, the listeners, that Benjamin was going to go up in price by 15 to 20% from week one. He's already up 15%. I think the direction it will head is up. It's hard to believe he'll be cheaper. So if Benjamin's a guy you like, I think you're buying him as cheaply now as possible, which is kind of strange coming off a huge game.
And the other guy going maybe the other direction is Julio Jones. So he has 13 total targets through the first 2 weeks. Is this – we have to go into the system and adjust players. It's the only way that we remain accurate over the course of the season or just over the course of the week. When we look at Julio Jones's targets, what do we do with these? Because we sure as heck don't have, like, we had him for almost 13 targets week one. And where do we put him? Like, what's the real truth on Julio Jones? Is he hurt? Are they just not looking at him? Do they have other options? Is the Atlanta, what do we do with his targets?
You know, it's going to be interesting because I think the narrative actually on Julio Jones is that he's back because he was over 100 yards and a touchdown last game. But the five targets are pretty troubling. I mean, it's really nice. Averaging better than 20 yards per reception is quite strong, and you'd love to see that. And it could just be that he's fine and he's the guy we always thought he was. But it's just very odd that 2 weeks in a row to not lead his team in targets. That's very unusual for last season. He could still be an elite wide receiver one for like season-long purposes, but you just can't include him in the conversation with guys who lock him in for 10-plus targets a game. That's where stability comes from, at the wide receiver position, and he's not there.
Yeah, and you know, maybe some of that a little could be game scripty. I'm not sure, because they were up a little bit going into the third quarter, but overall, the number's very troubling.
It was 13-7 at halftime. I mean, they weren't exactly crushing him.
No, and then 21-7, yeah, you're right. So it doesn't even – there's just no reason to explain it other than – they're just not looking his way. So
it's not the plan. The plan is not to throw to him every down. And, you know, they like Jacob Tammy there a lot, Mohamed Sanu. You know, it's easy to forget, I think, that Atlanta pretty much just had nothing after Julio Jones in the past. They had, like, Roddy White on one leg and just a mishmash of guys who couldn't catch the ball. So now that they have more options, like, it could be that some of the highest volume guys, like, I think I believe it's about DeAndre Hopkins now, too. It's just that when the team has nothing else, they're like, I guess we'll throw to this guy 200 times a game. But it's why most teams don't throw to any guy 200 times a game, because teams can stop that, generally speaking. So
yeah, so Matt Ryan throws to 9 different receivers this week.
Yeah, it's a terrible time for him.
Right, so
in a competitive game, you hate to see that.
Right, so it's just, that is a troubling sign. And now, could there be a week that they just exploit something with him and that they just dial him up for the whole game? Possibly. But you just don't see this from teams that are willing to just go to the same guy. Like, so it's unlikely. So to compare the situation, because these guys are on the same plane, I would say week one, it's unlikely that Antonio Brown, that Ben Roethlisberger throws to 9 different receivers next game, right? Like, right. And just knowing that Steeler personnel, knowing the way they play, it just doesn't seem likely that that's the kind of thing that happens. But now you've seen it happen for Julio, and again, I'm comparing them because these are the two guys you actually did compare week one. They were on.
To a lesser degree, you have to decide between them, right? Because you're not really going to be able to play both.
And so I think that to me is big time warning sign on his value going forward.
I mean, that said though, he's against the Saints this week. It's the Monday night game, so he's not a part of these huge contests. So I guess you don't need to decide it there. But the Saints, I mean, yeah, Beckham wasn't fantastic against them, but
he had a bunch of. I mean, he had 8 or 9 catches, I think, all said and done. It wasn't fantastic. And, fine, and that game actually ran the wrong way for him because fumbles killed a lot of their drives. So the game sort of just went in the
But he didn't put up 160 yards in a touch or anything like that, right? So, I guess what I'm saying is, if you're playing like a Sunday and a Monday slate, are you still have to look at Julio Jones, right, in that wide receiver one camp?
Oh, for sure. I'm a little worried that I can see, because I'm looking at our projection for him this week, and I know what our system says about wide receivers facing the Saints, and I'm seeing like what his points per dollar is already, and it just has me, concerned, because it's really not even close, because you have to give him a downgrade in targets almost 100%. You just can't keep him in like 13 range, and after that, his price, it's almost too much to pay for such an uncertain thing.
Yep, I'm with you. Yeah, so I think we did learn a lot about wide receiver. We'll get into a lot more guys in more specific detail, both in the picks podcast and the game-by-game breakdown. But I thought there was some interesting things happening at tight end this week as well, too. We talked about Witten, the uncertainty with the targets there. He's probably not going to be a 15-target guy for the rest of the season, it looks like. We talked about Bennett. Stock is definitely rising, particularly if Gronk is out again. And, you know, obviously it's a little bit trickier given a new quarterback. But a guy that a lot of people were on, and we were on too, was Jesse James. He played basically every offensive snap for Pittsburgh so far this season, and obviously connected with a touchdown last week. Very welcoming sign for a young guy that they're trying to work more into, especially the possession game. It seems like some of the stuff that Antonio Brown is losing is heading back in James's direction. And while, again, yeah, Brown 11 targets both week one and week two, Jesse James is definitely entering the conversation as one of these more reliable tight ends, particularly because you just don't have to spend a ton on him. So he's still 4,500 again on FanDuel this week. That's a giveaway. I suspect he'll be, 50% owned or something like that for cash game
purposes. Yeah, I think so. He was chalk already. And so when you're chalk going into the week and then you catch a touchdown, so you pay your price for the 45% or whatever that already started him, those 45% will likely go back to him. Yes. And then you're going to get the increase on whoever else didn't have him. So
yeah, he's just so cheap, and he's on radars, and people are already talking about him for 12-team season-long leagues and stuff. And when that's the case, obviously it was inflated by the touchdown, and the line looks pretty grisly if he doesn't get there. But, five targets, averaging six targets a week through the first 2 weeks, that's just plenty for a guy who's 4,500, whether he's going to score a touchdown or not. So, again, clearly being used in those short yardage situations. He's just out there blocking too, so definitely like his trajectory at least as the true, true punt play.
Yeah, I think as we get to, we'll have another podcast on Thursday where we'll kind of break down our picks for this week. Unlike the week one and week two where this recap podcast, I sort of already had a line of where we were going for week, for the subsequent week. Mm-hmm. I don't really feel that this week. I feel a little bit, not like things are unknown, but I can see where I can see where the margins are going to be close again. They were very close last week where a lot of mid-range wide receivers sort of fell into the same camp. There was a couple running backs for us that fell sort of in the same range. I was hoping things would crystallize a little bit more on pricing and some of the opportunity. I don't know if that's the case, at least right now. This is Monday night. We have the Bears and Eagles on in the background here, so we're still far away from having to think about anything for Thursday, but I can already just tell, and also when you throw some of those teams that are on bye, so you lower the player pool by whatever percentage. Yep. This could just be another challenging week, and I'm looking forward to really diving into the numbers and seeing sort of where the value springs to the top.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you, man.
All right, that is it for us heading out of week two into week three, live from this hotel room. Hit us with a sponsor on the way out.
Yeah, so just like to shout out our friends at FantasyFactor.com. They had a successful week one, and you can still go over there and get a $5, no strings attached bonus where you can put right into play so you don't have to drip it out by playing a bunch of contests. Still very, very good games over there. Not a lot of sharks entering multiple lineups into a bunch of tournaments. Just use promo code DFSR and they'll get you started. And I would be remiss not to talk about our own product, which is our Player Lab. It allows you to toggle, filter, tweak, make lineups for any kind of contest that you want for FanDuel and DraftKings. We have our lineup optimizers as well for the NFL and for MLB. You can check that out right now by going to dfsr.com/lab, dailyfantasysportsrankings.com/lab, and get started. And we hope to see you over there. Come say hi in the chat, and let's win some money next week.
Buddy, you crushed it. We'll talk to you again later on in the week.
Adios.